Good evening. Welcome to Quest Youth Radio, better known as Quest Community Vibrations. Music, like poetry, has a message, and history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meaning that we can comprehend, like definitions. News can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now pull back the curtain and see the contributions, and you will find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, vibration. Thank you for joining us this morning for another episode of Quest Community Vibrations, where we promise to help you hear a different perspective of our diaspora. Without any further ado, I'd like for the student host to introduce himself and start the show. Good evening. Good morning.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio. And on tap for today's show, you know, I want to highlight a very unknown black pioneer in our society. A lot of people really don't know who this man is, and I didn't know who he was until I just came upon him. Recently, but his name is Frank Mann, and you know, Frank Mann is a native Houston, is from Houston, Texas, and his full name is Frank Calvin Man. But his parents wanted him to become a school teacher. But from childhood, he had a natural ability to fix things. At age 11, he had his own mechanic shop. As a teenager, he worked alongside airplane mechanics repairing engines. By the age of 20, he had designed and built several of his own Model T cars. It was unheard of in the 1920s for a black man to have anything to do with cars, trains, or airplanes. His lifelong friend, Howard Hughes, was instrumental in opening doors for Mann's exceptional talents. Mann attended the University of Minnesota and UCLA, where he earned a mechanical engineering degree. World War II equipment that revolutionized military weaponry would not exist if not for his involvement. Mann was the first black commercial pilot for American Airways. He was also a distinguished military officer. In 1935, during the Ethiopia War, Mann flew Renaissance missions for the Ethiopian Army. He served in the World War II Army Air Corps and was primary civilian instructor for the Tuskegee Airmen in 1941. He left Tuskegee after a rift with the U.S. government, which did not want the squadron, an all-black unit, flying the same high caliber of airplanes as their white counterparts. A bitter man had refused to have men fly old World War I biplane crates because his airmen had proven themselves as equal. Though they were being given inferior equipment and materials, the squadron never lost a plane, bomber, or pilot, and they were nicknamed the Red Tails. After the war, Mann was instrumental in designing the first Buick LeSabre automobile and the first communication satellite launched for commercial use. His pride and joy was a miniature locomotive housed in a Smithsonian Institute. Mann also played a principal role in the Amos and Andy radio show. He moved back to his hometown in the 1970s, and he passed away 20 years later in 1992 in Houston. So that was the highlight, one of the highlights for today, for the diamond that I have for today. And, you know, Frank Mann, of course, he's a person, again, that a lot of people don't really know, but he was very important to a lot of things that were created that we use today, which deals with cars, and also the introduction with people of color into aviation and flying pilots and things like and flying planes. I mean, and things like that, and being pilots. He was one of the pioneers of that. So, you know, that's why I really wanted to highlight him. Just, you know, if anybody ever wants to pursue something like that or to know your history about, you know, how us as people at first were denied this opportunity to be able to do this. But, you know, somebody of his talent was able to push through and persevere and be able to be a part of something like this. So this is something that is always good to highlight. And, again, shout out to Frank Mann for, again, inspiring and paving the way for a lot of people of color going into STEM and technology field and also aviation.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I would like to mention is in your research, did you see anything about the Spruce Goose and Howard Hughes?
Okay, yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, he just was a personal friend of Howard Hughes. And he was instrumental in helping Howard Hughes build a plane. I forget the name. That was the name. The Spruce Goose, I think, was the name of the plane that Howard Hughes had a lot of money into. As a result of this particular plane, what happened was, I believe, Howard Hughes' plane became passengers, it became a model for passenger planes throughout the United States. But for Frank Mann to be personal friends to Howard Hughes, it just came as a surprise to me. Goes to show you behind the curtain, behind history, there are very interesting stories. And so I would like to continue musically now with another song. And don't you go anywhere. Keep it locked to 89.5 Quest Community Vibration.
Diamond, and I just want to read the intro for Diamonds. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into your past self and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, our second diamond, again, she's somebody that's actually more well-known than, you could say, Frank Mann. But, you know, they both were in the same field. And That was aviation. But we're switching over to the women's side, and I want to talk about Bessie Coleman. Now, in 1921, it was a time of both gender and racial discrimination. Coleman broke barriers and became the world's first black woman to earn a pilot's license. School in the United States denied her carry. She took it upon herself to learn French and moved to France to achieve her goal. After only 7 months, Coleman earned her license from France's well-known Cardin Brothers School of Aviation. Though she wanted to start a flying school for African Americans when she returned to the U.S., Coleman specialized in stunt flying and parachuting and earned a living barnstorming and performing aerial tricks. In 1922, she became the first African American woman in America to make a public flight. Now, you know, I could even go back, you know, even about 7 years ago, you know, she moved to Chicago, and this was something that didn't seem possible at first, you know, about in 1915 when she was only 23. But then she became, but since World War I came around that time, of course, was around 1915, you know, she started reading up about that, and that's what really sparked her interest in aviation. And, of course, during that time period, you know, like I said, for Frank Mann also, even for Bessie Coleman, you know, during those time periods, it just wasn't running off. We weren't given the opportunity to be able to pursue aviation at the time. And, you know, but these two people, they've had a huge interest in aviation, and they really wanted to pursue it. And even though she was denied at first, of course, because, of course, again, her being a woman, but also being a person of color, you know, she had ended up going all the way to France just to get her license, which just speaks to another cool part of our history in America. You have to go all the way there just to get a pilot's license where you're able to obtain one in the United States. But just because you don't fit the race requirement, you know, they're going to deny your access. So that's exactly what really happened to her. But also her being a woman was also much harder. But she was ended up being able to obtain it. And, you know, she ended up being able to come to the United States, you know, spread her knowledge, which was something that a lot of people, you know, lack, you know, once they get to that certain level, you know, it's hard for some people to probably translate it to other people, you know, it's kind of a self-centered thing, but, you know, somebody like her, she wanted to come back and she wanted to spread that knowledge to other people and have other people get the opportunity to be able to pursue this field. And, she also, you know, she specialized in, like, stunt flying and parachuting. And, you know, she earned a lot of achievements and accolades for that. So, you know, just in conclusion, you know, somebody like Bessie Coleman being a woman and wanting to come back and help her people even after she wasn't really getting assistance in this country, you know, she still came back and still came and helped others so that they can achieve this goal that she had. But, you know, that's really all I have to say about Bessie Coleman. But also, you know, Frank Mann, you know, comparing these two diamonds today, you know, you obviously the theme is really in the technology STEM field, you could also say, but also aviation, which even today was talked about a lot is how people of color especially are lacking in these fields and how they're always trying to get people to join and be a part of the STEM field, be part of the aviation field. They want more of that. So, you know, if again, people of color, you know, you have two role models I just read to you today that are pioneers to this, that started it all out for us. So, you know, if you want to pursue this field, you should look up on them and hear information out about them to see how to get started.
Now, just for the audience's sake, just in case there's somebody out there that doesn't know, what does STEM actually stand for?
Oh, yeah, of course. So STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math.
Okay. And I would say that these two diamonds exemplifies self-determination. And when we see a look at them through our binoculars, we see two young black aspiring aviators, engineers, and not being denied through their self-determination to dare to be different and also dare to be accomplished and actually accomplish themselves in aviation. And Frank Mann is just someone that I hadn't even heard about. Well, right now we're going to hear more music, a song called Boomerang. Don't you go anywhere, keep it locked.
Thank you.
Okay, Chris, you need an introduction?
Welcome back, welcome back. Hey, family, friends. I'm going to read the definition for the day, but before I do, definitions, this segment provides the listeners with words and their meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define our existence and not have it defined for us. So today's definition is word, first of all, today's word is arduous. Arduous is hard to accomplish or to achieve. It's difficult. It's marked by great labor or effort. Strenuous. Hard to climb or steep. Now, how arduous relates to our African American diaspora is back in, let's take it back to West Africa, back where slavery is said to begin. From the transitions from there up to today, from West Africa being sold as slaves to the Caucasians, being shipped through the Atlantic slave trade to then become American slaves, what we call as American slavery, those transitions were very arduous for our ancestors. And throughout those transitions, there were fights to become recognized, to be seen as equal, to have voters' rights. Those were all arduous tasks. There was nothing easy about what they did, and our ancestors paved a very great role for us today because of their arduous efforts, their hard work, their steep, dedicated hard work. So I related that to today's definition because currently arduous work for me has reared its head. I had a very difficult semester this year for school, and I had to persevere. It was hard. It was very arduous, but I kept my head about myself, and I succeeded, and I made it through the semester so that I could see another one, another arduous one at that. So that was today's word and definition, arduous.
Okay, thank you very much for that. what maybe wasn't so arduous segment. We'll be right back.
Yes, and welcome back, everybody, the music. But, you know, now I want to shout out Chris for giving us that first definition. But I'm going to switch it over, and I'm going to give everybody another definition for today. And that definition is patent. And, see, a patent is a government authority or license conferring a right or title for a set period, especially the sole right to exclude others from making, using, or selling an invention. So basically, when you get a patent, it's just something that you're claiming that is yours, that you created, and that you own all the rights to, so that no, if you see somebody else trying to sell it or something like that, you could just basically sue them. But yeah, just having a patent, especially with the theme for today, going into the STEM field, is very important. You know, there's been a lot of people of color in history, actually, that, you know, has inventions that they don't get a lot of credit for, and that's because, you know, either other people would steal their ideas and they claim it is theirs, and that has happened in history. Just the simple fact that patents weren't really talked a lot about to them. So, you know, you could have had a lot of these black inventors that had these creations, but it was just never identified as their creation unless we actually did the research or so we know it firsthand and it was told to others. So that's why a patent is very important. That's why I'm stressing it again today, because, you know, especially if somebody wants to go into that field, you know, you might have that invention that's going to solve a problem, and, you know, you want to be able to claim it as yours and help solve that problem. But once you create it, you're going to need to have that patent, because there's probably going to be people out there, you know, rich, wealthy people or people that's trying to take advantage of you and take your idea, and they end up taking all the rights to it and taking all the credit for it, and you really get no credit. So that's why a patent is just very important for a lot of people to get, you know. But yeah, if you just have an invention out there and you want to claim it as yours, make sure you just get a patent so that it could be protected.
Okay, so just like Bessie Coleman had a problem receiving a pilot license in America, there were untold amount of black inventors who had a problem receiving patents for their invention in America. You see, the patent office wasn't always, as it is, colorblind today, back then. And so when you talk about patents and inventions and who actually got the credit for an invention, well, you know, there's some inventions out here that I would venture to say did not belong to some of the quote-unquote inventors that got credit for it, okay? So when it boiled down to trying to get a patent for a particular invention, it was cutthroat, even amongst white people. And so you just can only imagine what it was like if you were black trying to receive a patent in history in America. And when we talk about history in America, sometimes it seems like, you know, for you, Walter, being a teenager, it seems like probably hundreds of years ago. But it's, maybe we're talking 75 years ago, less than 100, maybe almost 50 years ago, 55. So the relevance of you bringing up the definition, the word patent, and elaborating on its definition is very important. And right now, I'm going to see if I can find a jazz piece to entertain our audience. Keep it locked to 89.5 FM. And now it's time for our next segment, presented by Walter Pierce, Curtain, which is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtains of the stage. You see, many recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community. But what benefits has the community gained of their musical growth and history? The impact in a particular style and genius on the general moods and attitudes of the listening audience. Yeah, that's you. Musical and lyrical social consciousness as presented by the artist over a period of CD releases. Curtain serves best as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist's, and this evening, his genius and his involvement in influencing all people, style, and creativity in the world today. And 1 second while I bring Walter back on, right? Walter, hold tight, and here we go.
Yes, and welcome back, everybody. And, you know, we just had that jazz song playing to us, but, you know, we're going to a blues artist. And, you know, he's an artist that has had a couple hits that a lot of people know of our community. And, you know, without further ado, his name is Muddy Waters. And, you know, really where his career picked up at is where he moved to Chicago, Illinois in 1943. You know, the following year after that, his uncle gave him an electric guitar. It was with this guitar that he was able to develop the legendary style that transformed the rustic blues of the Mississippi with the urban vibe of the big city. He was working a paper mill by day, but sweeping the blues scenes by night. By 1946, he had grown so popular that he had begun making records for a big record company such as RCA, Columbia, and Aristocrat. But his recordings with Aristocrat received little recognition. It was until 1950 when Aristocrat became Chess Records that Waters' career really began to take off with hits like I'm Your Hoochie Coochie Man and Got My Mojo Working. His sensual lyrics piqued interest in the young crowds of the city. Also, Rolling Stones, one of his singles became so popular that it went on to influence the name of the major music magazine as well as one of the most famous rock bands to date. You know, by 1951, Waters had established a full band of Otis Spann on piano, Little Walter on harmonica, Jimmy Rogers on second guitar, and Elgin Evans on drums. The band's recordings were increasingly popular in New Orleans, Chicago, and the Delta region in the United States. But it wasn't until 1958 when the group brought their electric blues and sound to England that Waters became an international star. After the English tour, Waters' fan base expanded and began to catch the attention of the rock and roll community. His performance at the 1960 Newport Jazz Festival was a particularly pivotal point of his career, as it caught the attention of new fan bases. Waters was able to adapt to the new changing times, and his electric blues sound fit and well with the love generation. Waters continued to record with rock musicians through the 1960s, 70s, and won his first Grammy Award in 1971 for the album They Call Me Muddy Waters. After his 30-year run with Chess Records, he went in separate ways in 1975, suing the record company for royalties after his final release with them, Muddy Waters' Woodstock album. Waters signed on with Blue Sky label after the split. He then captivated audiences with his appearance in the band's farewell performance, known as The Last Waltz, an exceptionally star-studded affair that was released as a film by Martin Scorsese in 1978. But yeah, you know, towards really the end of his life, you know, he gathered a total of 6 Grammys, as well as countless other honors. But, you know, he ended up sadly suffering a heart attack in 1983. But, you know, just the career he really had, you know, with this unique name, him making the smart decision, being able to move to Chicago, being able to be able to adapt, which was very important for him, you know, being able to adapt to the different generations so that he can increase his fan bases, really what really sparked his career. You know, he had Rolling Stone, of course, everybody really knows that song in our community. You know, that was a song that really sparked his career as well, and really sparked his legacy as well. He was able to make blues and to, you know, add a with a little twist to it so that other people could be attracted to it. So that's really just what made the great artist he was. That's really what makes a lot of people great, being able to adapt to different situations. Because when you do that, you know, that's how you gain a more following and audience, and that's how people start to take notice. And, you know, Muddy Waters was just somebody, of course, that was before my time, but as I can see here, you know, just the achievements and the impact he had on people was something that should not be taken lightly. And, you know, just rest in peace, Muddy Waters, and thanks everybody for listening to this segment.
Well, how about a song by Muddy Waters? Chris in, and Walter, please engage Chris.
But yeah, Chris, you know, you had your I heard you had your definition of today again. What made you really pick that definition for today, and why was that so prominent, especially for today?
That definition was pretty on my mind, actually, when I got into a conversation about what would the definition of the day be. It was already on my mind. So I figured what more than something that a lot of people, you know, deal with personally. We all go through hard times. We struggle. We say things like are insurmountable. Like, it's real complicated for people. So everybody has struggles. Everybody goes through things. So I felt that was something that would ring true to the masses, to the listeners, you know, try to expand everybody's vocabulary to, you know, get out of the mundane words. Things are hard. Things are complicated. All right, let's try. Things are arduous, you know. Let's get an expansion on our vocabulary. That's pretty much what our definitions do for me. And if no one really listens for definitions in that fashion, it does that for me, to be able to get different words for the same meaning. So that's kind of where I was at with it. And I liked your definition of patent. So what inspired you to bring patent to the table?
Yeah, you know, patent is, again, when I was talking about people like Frank Mann and Bessie Coleman and how they relate to, like, things like the STEM field and innovation and things like that. You know, when you create something, you always want to be able to have get the recognition for it, of course, and to get all the props for it. You don't want somebody taking the credit of what you created. You know, I could even speak for a couple of people of color. An example, like the man who created the filament for the light bulb for Thomas
Edison.
Louis
Lattimore.
Louis Lattimore. But guess who gets all the credit for the light bulb? You don't really hear about Louis Lattimore as much as you hear about Thomas Edison. But the thing is that without that filament, the light bulb is not going to work. So that's why, really, he should really get as much credit, because he created something that really sparked the entire project. And without that, it wouldn't have worked. So, you know,
you hit that right on the head, Walter. And it's a very important thing for people to understand that works in our favor. You know, people of color are very creative and intuitive. You know, we come up with things on a fly, so we want to be able to be protected for our ideas, you know, our creations, and patents were put in place to be able to do that, you know. So that's a pretty good definition to remind the masses of, or even to teach the masses of, for those that haven't known about it in the first place.
That's really why I wanted to get the point across to people out there, you know. Just having a creation that you have in mind, anything, make sure you're able to make sure you get all the credit for it, for actually creating it, because you never know how important down the line it might be.
Okay. So with that being said, we have a couple of people who have been very patient. And if they're still on the line, I'd like to bring Calvin on and question or comment for this evening's show.
No questions, just a comment. As always, a great show, guys. You put on a heck of a performance. I guess in the spirit of Kwanzaa, Habari Gani to each and every one of you. Have a great holiday. You guys keep up the great work. It's just so exciting to, you know, you guys have grown tremendously from 15-minute show to 30 minutes to now an hour. Great job. Keep up the great work.
And we have Val on the line, if she's still there.
Yes, she's still here, and I concur with Calvin. Great job. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to seeing you grow even more.
Okay. So with that being said, Walter, close us out.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. Tune into our show 7 a.m. in the morning so that you could hear you could hear the show. If you want to hear it again, you want to hear other shows, make sure you tune in Saturday at 7 a.m. on 89.5 WSOU. And again, Quest Youth Radio is the best.
The best.
The best.
Youth
radio.